Hey everyone, Vito here from More Beer. I'm outside the Good Hop in Oakland, one of my favorite craft beer bars. It's owned by Melissa Myers, an amazing person, was a brewer for a long time, owns this amazing bottle shop. We're getting everybody together that I did a episode with for a Christmas special. So let's go inside. The gang's all here. We're gonna have a great time. Hey, welcome everyone here. We're gonna start with Matt to do the first question. It was the first video we did, so I'd like to start with the first question to you, and it's gonna be one about what was the first beer that made you fall in love with brewing and beer in general?
So I'd already been kind of homebrewing a little bit, but it was a fateful trip to Seattle in the mid-90s. My cousin took me to a brewery called Red Hook. And obviously now it's known to be something other than it was, but back then, Red Hook, their ESB, was the beer that got me into craft beer. I loved it, couldn't get enough of it, and that's what opened my eyes. I came back home and then started perusing the shelves and opened my eyes to a world of beer that I didn't know was out there. So I would blame it on Red Hook for that one. Yeah.
Blame it on the Red Hook. I would say probably like the first few releases of Ruination IPA from Stone. Like, it was kind of like a fruitier approach, and like, yeah, it was like a big aggressive double IPA, and I might have not been 21 at the time, and I kind of liked the alcohol point of things, but it was a little bit more pale. It was a little bit just less malty and like almost like a modernish step toward what IPA is now, and I just kind of fell in love with that beer, and I was like, all right, if more beers are like this, then I can drink more of that and be into it. So yeah, Ruination IPA, funky one.
Nice. Yeah, I went to college in San Diego, so Stone was the big one, and Arrogant Bastard was kind of my youth where I thought I was a badass, and I could show off that I was drinking Arrogant Bastard, and that was kind of the first stepping stone.
You want to?
Yeah, let me tell you about my first.
You're going to be double mic right now? Yeah. Give me the comment.
Don't need the mic. I'm glad you said Red Hook, because mine was also Red Hook too, but it wasn't the ESB. It was their double black stout Starbucks coffee. It was like 1996, 97. I echo wins. I might not have been legal age to drink at the time, but it was great. You know, just super malty, super thick. It was like motor oil. And I was like, I love this and I want to drink more and make more.
Nice. Well, keeping up with the younger crowd, I was at a Grateful Dead show at the Garden in Jersey, and we go out to the parking lot. My older brother brought me, and he buys beers out of a trunk of some guy's car, and it's this green bottle or a green label, and I'd never had. My dad drank Pabst my whole life, so that's the only beer I'd ever had, and it's Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, and it was like, holy cow, my eyes were open, and that was the beer.
I also have a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale story, but it's not the one that got me into beer. First drinking in college, it was always like Coors Light kegs or Natty Ice kegs, and it was always awful. And then one day, someone bought a keg of Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, and I thought that was like the worst thing I ever had in my life when I drank it at that age. So it took me a few years to kind of get into it, and then actually Sam Adams Boston Lager, my friend had a bunch, and we started drinking those, and it was really good. And then the one that kind of really put it over the edge for me was Saison DuPont. A bottle of that was, then it just kind of opened up the floodgates of what's possible.
Growing up in SoCal in LA, I'm gonna echo Wynn here, Stone, but it was Stone's Cali Belgique. I was actually down in San Diego for a skydiving trip, and skydiving on the drive back to LA, we stopped at Stone, sat at the corner of the bar, and it was Cali Belgique that blew my mind, because it was hoppy and like Belgian-y. I didn't really understand what any of that was. The bar manager started talking to us, and then he just started giving us pretty much every beer they had on tap, including the guest beers, one of which was DuPont. And it kind of just, I came home from that trip, I'm like, are there breweries in Los Angeles? And like started Googling, and then like went down that rabbit hole.
Yeah. Mine would be Still Reserve 211, 99 cents for a 24-ounce can, throw it in a beer bong, and get drunk when you're 19. Russian River Blind Pig, for sure. Nice, dry, crisp, the Simcoe Centennial kind of thing. That was kind of, I mean, I think Stone, we can all agree, Stone is probably what got most of us hop heads cooking, but I think Blind Pig was kind of like another level beer that ultimately influenced me, so, yeah.
All right, so Lester and Magic, it was pretty fun to go back and watch that video, and I realized then, because Vito and I just did a video like 2 or 3 weeks ago on Thiel's, Thiel's, whatever, and I'm like, what the hell? You guys were already talking about those, you know, like a year ago. And just curious, like, are you guys still exploring that world? Are you still pushing that envelope?
Absolutely. I think I'm sure everyone here is pushing those, the hop files and everything going on there. I'm still hesitant to go 100% using yeast that like will do that on purpose. I think it's so over the top and awesome, but in some ways kind of limits what a brewer can do with those ingredients, because it makes everything, it almost tastes the same in some way. It's a really awesome flavor. And I think there's just other ways of doing it. We're picking yeast that are maybe thiel forward, but aren't necessarily 100% like GMO thiel yeasts.
Not all about it.
Not all about it. There's a couple new ones out there. These Lallemand Nova Lager, tried it out a couple times. We were able to get some yeast before it was out to the public. And honestly, it's really, especially in the West Coast Pilsners, have been really awesome at pushing that hop character. But I think there's definitely more to play with, and there's way too many variations in everything you can do. And I'm sure everyone here has an answer to that question, but yeah, we're definitely, it's a path that we're going to continue working on.
Have you guys used Phantasm?
We have a box sitting in the back and just haven't gotten around to it. It's like one box of hops is not enough for our big tanks, and it's too much for a small tank. And so, and it's just planning a beer like that is, we're trying to find a spot in the schedule to really mess with it.
What do you guys think is kind of next? Like, you know, if you guys were the next level on Thiel's that long ago, what do you think's next coming up the pipeline now?
I think everything that all the beers we're tasting, I mean, just look at the beers that are on everyone's table. I think we're getting back to beers that are just nice and drinkable for the most part, whether that's hoppy or lager or dark lager or whatever it is. And being able to get hops into a beer and not make it taste bitter, super bitter, super acrid, over the top, burn your palate. I think that's really where people are going to go, especially with like RTD cocktails and seltzers that are, those are super easy to drink. And if we want to be able to attract some of those people, I think getting beers in general that are just super crushable, but with a ton of flavor, and making sure that it doesn't ruin your yields and all that with on the production side, getting to that point is, I think, going to be super important.
No, I mean, I think just like adding to what Magic said, it's interesting because we've kind of gone through this like long wave, much longer, I think, than most people had envisioned of hazy IPAs. And the challenge with hazy IPAs sometimes is a lot of the flavors get muddled because there's so many things going on and so many things happening in there that it's kind of fun to start like dialing it back to go into, like you said, clearer beers where you can start isolating individual flavors a little bit more, pull out individual hop characters more that we were using a lot in a hazy IPA, that you start dialing it back into something like a West Coast or, you know, West Coast Pils or anything. You start tasting these hops like almost for the first time, essentially, because the character is a lot cleaner and more linear than it was as part of a hazy bill.
All right, so Justin, in your episode, we were talking about Nose Goblin Double IPA. At the time, it won a GABF gold medal. You've since won another one with Nose Goblin, and then you guys won Brewery of the Year, so I just want to say congratulations to that.
Thank you. These guys over here, awesome crew.
All right, but we're not talking about just Nose Goblin. I want to talk about hops, right? So you guys just did Hop Harvest, right? A lot of us did. You guys did Hop Harvest. What are some cool new hops? What hop do you think is awesome? Like, you know, the Mosaic from this farm is great, and or what's a hop that's coming out, you know, like Brew One came out, things like that, that home brewers and commercial brewers need to look out for.
Sweet. Well, first off, I will say Crop 22 is very exciting because we're not dealing with smoke taint this year. So yay to everybody, to home brewers, to small brewers, to this, the whole world. That being said, of course, Mosaic is my love, my baby. We always go through Brewlot Farms for Mosaic. We're stoked with what we're getting this year. But as far as the newest hop, you know, I think we briefly talked about it, and we're using the shit out of it, as I think most of us are, but Experimental 586. That's the coolest thing that hit the table in a long time. It's not like the Sabro crap and shit like that. That's suntan lotion, sprinkling MSG into your fucking beer. No, it's a unique hop because it's like I tried a beer the other day and I was sitting up the brewery talking about it, and it, like, the beer itself tasted like there was Rawaka to El Dorado in it, and they're like, that was 100% 586. You know, so you get this like slight diesel from it all the way to this dank tropical fruit from it, which is awesome. So personally, I mean, for me, that's the hop I'm most excited about this year to see how it comes out. It's still being grown in small acreage too, you know, so the quality of it should be pretty consistent as far as what we're all getting across the board. There are a couple other new hops coming out. We're going to be playing around with one we just brewed with last week from Indie Hops called Luminosa. Excited. Smell dank as fuck on the table, but they're insistent that it's more of a hazy hop, so we just did a 100% hazy with it to try it out. Dry hopping on Thursday, so, but yeah, it was definitely like, you know, citrus, tropical, but this one definitely had a just a touch of that, just, you know, like indica dank kind of characteristic that we look for in our mosaic. So it was kind of exciting to try it out. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Siegel Ranch, but they just released a hop called Anchovy. Cellar Maker already brewed a beer with it. It's weird. I tried it. It's kind of like a Centennial on steroids, but unfortunately the name's going to make it kind of a hard one. So, and there's a few other ones. What Vista's pretty popular this year. We're going to brew a batch with that. But I really think, like, if you were going to, you know, look for one new hop that came out this year, well, it's been out for about 2 years, but 586 is, my opinion, is going to be the next big thing that's kind of cooking. So.
Yeah, Freestyle Farms in New Zealand's doing some really fun, like, powerful, just smelling hops, and they just released this new one earlier this year called Peacherine. I'll give you $100 if you guess what it tastes like. But honestly, I didn't really get too much like a giant peach thing on it. It was definitely just like a very like oily, saturated, just like fruit forward hop to it, and yeah, super stoked on that. We did a single hop, like, hoppy lager with it, and it just kind of blew the beer out of the water in a really, really good way. And, you know, some of these new hops, they kind of shine in some beers versus other beers. I've heard other breweries kind of, like, using it in, like, an IPA or double IPA, and then it's, like, it's not exactly where they wanted it to. So we kind of felt like we nailed it with this, like, you know, 5-ish%, like, light, but still, like, you know, 4 pound per barrel, dry hops, solid whirlpool charge and everything. And yeah, Peacherine, it's tasting rad. It's a fun one.
All right, Wynn, well, we've watched you come pretty far in brewing, which has been pretty rad. As someone who's now an owner and brewer, what advice do you have for homebrewers?
Oh man, that's
especially
hard.
The ones who are thinking about going pro.
Just focus on the beer. Beer. There's so many other things to worry about to make a successful business nowadays. And it's kind of a double-edged sword for me because I am like a very, like, you know, hardcore, just like back of the house brewer, as I've always been. And, you know, now working on, you know, like marketing and employees and taproom and everything, like, that's where I'm kind of like lacking in that experience. But like, I still always go back to like, none of this stuff would matter if like the quality of the beer was not where it needs to be. So just like always hyper focus on the beer, highest quality you can possibly do. There's never too much you can do lab wise like analyzing the beer, all that stuff. So yeah, just kind of just have a laser focus and just be open to different flavors, be open to new things. But yeah, I would say that's kind of like the biggest thing. Like, we all got into this industry for tasting amazing, beautiful beers. And yeah, it's like, I know that, you know, there's so many cool things you can do with the other parts of the business. But yeah, if you are, I feel like if I can tell myself one thing when I was opening up the brewery, or even when I was like, you know, 10 years ago, still homebrewing and working at EJ Fair, I'll just still be like, hey, like, this is the most important thing, the beer. So yeah, kind of a simple answer, but, you know, just keeping it quality first, and then everything else will kind of happen as it comes.
Work itself out.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, I think, like, to that point of don't, which is good advice. You know, the other thing to keep in mind is like the market is so, like, it's so busy, right? There's so many breweries around, and I completely agree, like, it's about product, right? To me, it's like products and then the people who work in your company. Like, the product and the people, I think, are two critical ones. But kind of that single thread between it all, though, is just be like very focused on why you're different. You know, it could be the best product. It could be, you know, this is a style you like to do, but just try to carve out like your niche, right? Try to think about why would someone come to my brewery versus somebody else's brewery? And if you can't answer that question yourself, then keep searching because you got to find that to kind of stand out from the crowd.
No, yeah, if you're taking the time to do this yourself and do all that and spend all the money, seek advice. Ask your peers, ask everybody in this industry, because most of us are open books, but you have to ask. You know, we're not going to come to you and tell you what to do or anything like that, but when I was learning, I just asked questions left and right, and everybody I asked questions to were humble and wonderful and gave me a lot of information, and we've been through it all. We've made horrible beers to really, really great beers. But yeah, don't be afraid to ask a professional what they've done, because usually they'll tell you, and then, you know, take notes, listen, you know, don't be too stubborn and don't think you know everything, because you don't if you're starting off. So
kind of bouncing off of what Wynn said, some advice I got years ago from Denise Jones is sometimes being different and what sets you apart is that you go back to your roots. You know, I think you were saying earlier, a lot of breweries are doing these fruited sours and these milkshake IPAs, and that's fine. But sometimes what sets you apart is your very, very drinkable, clean beers, right? I was talking to a brewer who was starting his own brewery, and he came in with a pale ale that had like mango and this and that, and I'm like, Let's work on the pale ale first, you know. Drinkable pale ale, and let's forget about the lactose and the mango and all that, you know. Go back to what people love about beer, and it's dry and it's drinkable and it's quaffable, and that's I think what's important.
Agreed. Yeah, like the basics. It's like we got, like, you know, homebrewers come in all the time and like bring beers of just like, you know, it's like wild, like coconut sour, this or that. And like the other day, this homebrewer came in with like a Northern English brown ale. I'm like, oh hell yeah, dude! Like, this is where it's like yeah, you know, starting off classic and then, you know, like just getting your basics down and then explore after that. Because if your foundation of brewing knowledge is just kind of, you know, there's so many key points to making amazing beer, and kind of like making, like hitting those first and then exploring is definitely a piece of advice I would say. Just make sure you get your basics down and then explore all you want.
All right, guys, so this next question was going to be to Stacy, who's the owner of Oak Barrel Winecraft. It's a homebrewing shop, local homebrewing shop that we all know and love. But she's not here, so I'm going to ask it to Chris, because you also own a homebrew shop. So, you know, it was one of my, I loved all the episodes I did with you guys, but this one I loved the most because it's important. I met all you guys through homebrewing, right? So it's like, to me, you know, it's an important part of the community. So the question I was going to ask to her was, how important is the local homebrew store to the craft beer community and the brewing community, you know, as a whole?
Well, I think you answered most of your own question there. Nice job. No, they are super important. And I'm not just saying that from my role, because I'm probably seen as the enemy by a lot of small homebrew shops. I get that. Like, I've been called the Jeff Bezos of homebrewing, but it's ridiculous. We're not even in like the same planet sphere. But it's the place that we all hopefully went into when we first learned about homebrewing, whether it was the first time we homebrewed or somewhere near that. Because we had questions. I mean, like you said, ask questions. And that's what I think, we're mostly very curious people as brewers. And we are seeing just a ton of them go out of business, either right before COVID, during COVID, and now after COVID. And it's brutal, the amount that are going out. Because for me, that's also my lifeblood of new people coming into the hobby. We've kind of always been known as like the high-end place. Like, that's, you know, we love gadgets and toys, and we build stuff in metal shops and bring in stuff from all over the world. And we get, most homebrew shops can't do that, but they can bring in new blood, new excitement. They're the place. I worked at one in Springfield, Oregon, in the mall. Like, a homebrew shop in the mall, bad idea, but it was great. The amount of new people we talked to about homebrewing. Now, the number one question is, can you brew beer as good as Budweiser? But which is a hard question to answer. But anyway, like, and one of the things about, you know, breweries often come from homebrew shops, whether they've worked in them, I'm looking at some of you guys down there, or went to them, or a lot of homebrew shops have open breweries. I mean, they're very symbiotic, so I think they're important. In fact, one of the cool things I can say is looking around, we actually have a kit from each one of you guys. And that's pretty rad to be able to have that. And so as you as a homebrewer coming to learn, being able to get one pre-set up by a professional brewer is pretty cool.
Obviously, we all got started homebrewing, but I remember being told going into Moorbeer by somebody working in the showroom, you're here more than I am. Because, like, literally, straight up, I would be in there, and it was like my Toys R Us. I'd be looking at the sculptures, and I'd be, you know, obviously they're buying ingredients, but I would also be there, like my eyes this wide looking at what I want next, right? And I know you don't do the physical catalog anymore, but that used to be, you know, remember the best catalog when you were a kid? I'm aging myself. It would come and it would have the, like, the toys, the Christmas toys, and then you'd earmark all the pages that, yes. Yeah. That was your catalog for me.
I thought you were going to say JCPenney where they had the bras in there.
But to your point, the fact that my kid is there now, it's so cool to go in there and see that. Also knowing that I would go in there, a bright-eyed young buck, you know, really into the homebrewing scene and wanting to be a part of it. So, yeah.
Yeah, like in the beginning of like any brewer's career, that's kind of like ground zero for everything. Just like, you know, you go there, you bring your freshly bottled beer to like the guys behind the counter. You're like, all right, like we're all cracking this. Like, what does everyone think? Someone walks in there like, hey, you're tasting this. I want to know what you think too, and whatever. But yeah, such a huge important part to the beer world. Every brewer owner has that connection to it. And it's homebrewing. It's the roots of us all for the most part.
I homebrewed a ton when I really got into beer and went to I had like three or four or five different homebrew shops I would go to in Los Angeles. As another one would open up, I'd go because they'd all also have different ingredients and I learned so much. But I also learned a ton from the homebrew clubs that like you found at those at all the different shops and going to those meetings, tasting everyone else's beer. I think that's really when I learned the most at the club meetings. And at some point was also like, oh man, I'm making pretty good beer because mine's better than that guy's. But like, but it's like, those were the best like times for me at homebrew clubs. Like, and nothing against more beer, but like you don't have those moments without having the physical locations where you can go taste beer. Go like
Warbeer has physical locations.
Well, they have, but only like a couple.
Yeah, we have four of them, and they're the number one thing that's struggling right now. And yes, we are often I got a conch.
I did reach for it.
It's a natural reaction. They are typically, that's like the number one thing we tell everyone is like, if you're not part of the local homebrew club, you got to look at it, because for us, if we can get you into a club, if we can make that connection, that's much higher success rate that you'll keep doing it. First homebrew store I walked into as a fresh, I'm in University of Oregon, and I saw the joy of homebrewing. I didn't even get to read it. I just saw a few things in it. And I go in with like a billion questions, and the guy's reading a Louis Lamar book, pulls it down, and he's like, books are back there, brings his book back up, and that was my first experience at a homebrew shop.
Yeah, I love that you said the homebrew club too. That's where I met Matt, I met Tasty, yeah, you know, all these people. Yeah. So like, and I would leave every meeting wanting to make better beer and just wanting to brew like once a month. It was just, you know, it gave me such for like, soon as that happened, boom, like I really got into beer. So the club was even more so than the showroom, but I knew about the club from the show, you know, and that kind of stuff. So it was all kind of symbiotic relationship. So coming on the back of like the homebrew shop, we talked about how that's important. I think this is another one. How important is the bottle shop, the tap room, to the craft beer industry? You know, one of the things, you know, when I was a commercial brewer, I loved when you guys would put like beer on Instagram, and it was like, oh my God, that's, you know, you break to the people that aren't, you know, in the know about beers and breweries that are out there. So to me, it's a huge part. So how important is it?
I mean, I want to say it's super important since I own one. God, I hope it's important. but so we were talking earlier today. I think, and I've seen some articles that the bottle shop is a dying breed. And I think that is true to a point. You know, we're more now, I think we just really try to be a neighborhood bar that has like a craft beer problem, you know? It used to be where you'd go into a bar and maybe Sierra Nevada was the most craft on, right? Or you cross through three neighborhoods to get to the bottle shop because that's where all the craft beer is. But the reality is craft beer is everywhere now. You know, you can get it. I use this one all the time. Star Pizza over on Grand, he has 16 taps. He has some of the same beers I have. You know, like you can get it anywhere. You don't have to cross the town or drive into San Francisco to go to the Tornado. You know, you can find good craft beer at your local pizza place or wherever. So I think they're becoming less important in that aspect and that you can get good beer anywhere. I think the hope is that it's still important and that it's a place to showcase. It's a place for brewers to showcase their beer amongst each other, right? In a nod to the cooler over there, like it's a place for you to put your best wares up there, up against everybody else, and hope that people find you. You know, so I don't know. I'd like to say we're still important.
No, you are still important.
We certainly appreciate it. Yeah, and to your point, it's an important aspect for me, and I'm sure I speak for everybody that when you have my beer on, I love being able to have my beer on next to all these great brewers as well. Comparing your beer up against some of the best in the industry is important. You know, important to me, important to all of us. Yeah.
I think one of the key things is, as someone who loves to learn new things, but sometimes trying to be self-directed learning. Like, I don't want to sit on the internet looking at Untappd or whatnot all the time, where if I can come into a place like this and you can find the gems, and I have one closer to my house that I do it at all the time, where it's like I get introduced to beers that I wouldn't have probably ever found on my own to buy direct or whatnot, that I just wouldn't have found because they're in the local cooler, they're on tap. You ask one question and the people always seem to know what they're talking about. You go to that pizza place and they're like, I don't know, it's on there. Like, yeah. I'm sure you'll like it. Other people like it.
Sure. And like, you know, with a place like this, you know, it's like, I mean, I definitely come to a place like this when you want just like freshness. It's like, you know, like when I see on the social media, it's like, oh, Ghost Town, whoever came out with this new beer in this week. I'm like, cool. I know I can go to like the Good Hop. And that's going to be like there within, you know, 2 days of canning the beer and just like the freshness of it. Yeah, rather than like going to some random restaurant. Sure, they have craft beer, but like it's definitely not nearly as like important and like as like taken care of as like these like beer bars and bottle shops do. Like it's almost kind of like, it's like these places are kind of like the homebrew clubs for professional brewers. This is where I go and kind of like, you know, taste the competition, like, you know, see like where like what like the state of the industry, like how everyone's beers are tasting. And it's such an important place as like my growing up in the beer world, like, you know, going to the craft beers bars and just tasting, talking to the bartender, like, you know, talking about every little last aspect of the beer, tearing it apart, you know, oh, maybe you don't want to try that one. That one's kind of like a little dassel. You know, it's like, there's just like the beer tenders, the craft beer bars, the bottle shops are just like, I mean, it's like, that's more like the highways, the biggest highways of, you know, the craft beer world at the moment. And I'm a fan. I love it.
You brought up a good point. And when I met Melissa, I was working for a beer distributor for Lime Ventures at the time. And seeing that, you know, I deliver amazing beers from all of you guys to these places, and the ones like, you know, that pizza shop, I don't know if pizza shop was like this, but they didn't take care of the beer. They're like, oh, put it out back in that alleyway that's 90 degrees, right? But places like this that I know take care of the beer and care about it and train your staff, I mean, to me, that's like, that's why I come to these places, because, you know, it's about the beer itself, right? And telling that story. You don't see that everywhere, you know, so you get that from these local shops that care.
And I think, like, to that point too, like, I've been using this term a lot recently, which is just like the vibe, right? It's like the vibe is right at places like this, because beyond just the product and it's taken care of well, which is kind of like, it's a given, it's also like you are coming to places like this to meet and have these like instantaneous reactions with like-minded people. You know, it's people who are coming here to seek out like good craft beer. And it's not just, I happen to be at this pizza place and I have a beer. It's like, no, they're going there for the pizza or with their family. But when you come to places like this, you're coming like for the experience of great craft beer, and the people around you, these conversations you have, these people you meet, they're all around great craft beer. And it's the same thing with in-person homebrew shops, right? Like you are going there to meet like-minded people and have these like-minded conversations. And that's like something that you can't replicate online. You can't have that any other digital way. You can't have that at the store shelves of a grocery store, you know, without looking creepy in the beer aisle. It's like, but here you can be as creepy as you want. And it's just like, everyone's creepy with you, you know?
It's a new slogan for the door.
All right, so Andrew, you're on deck here. So you went from a home brewer to brewing on a pretty darn big system. Pretty amazing. But I heard on social media, or saw on social media, that you used a homebrew setup to do some training with your staff. Curious about that.
Well, the homebrew setup that you're talking about was a Brewzilla, I'm assuming, which we got from our last YouTube video. Thank you very much. So we brew at 35 barrels, so about 1,000 gallons. We have a small pilot system that's 5 barrels, which is 150 gallons. It's nice to brew on an even smaller scale at 5 to 10 gallons. Gives us the ability to, we're testing making a non-alcoholic beer. I don't want to just jump right into brewing 150 gallons of a non-alcoholic beer. And it gave us the ability to kind of multitask. So I had an employee that was brewing and also learning on a small scale. It's funny, I've taught all my employees how to brew beer, but the best way to really train a brewer is to have them home brew, because it gives them really a good foundational knowledge of actually what's happening. You're kind of there on the ground level, you're doing the actual things versus on a large scale, you're pressing buttons and, you know, it's automatically doing solenoid valves and things like that. So the Brewzilla gives you the ability to just do weird, fun beers that wouldn't necessarily sell as like 5 barrels, and to test new kind of ways of doing things, especially non-alcoholic beers.
I was going to say, how'd that come out?
It came out really well. There's so many ways of doing non-alcoholic beers. I'm sure everybody would talk about it. But the way we did it turned out really nice. So
what
no
did
complaints.
You guys do? Proprietary right here. I can't talk about it. He's like, I'm recording. What's,
there's a bird over there.
All the telling faces.
What is non-alcoholic beer?
Yeah. I'm a hedonist. What is this?
At Danville Brewing, we have a restaurant and a tap room and the brewery, and I try to get front of house staff back in the brewery to do some hands-on stuff, you know, come back for a brew day. Even if it's just, you know, we all know that the meat and potatoes of it is mashing in and all that, and the rest of it is standing around watching a kettle boil. But that
edit.
No, but that gives me an opportunity that they're a captive audience at that point, and I can fill their head with as much nonsense as I want during that time. And it's a great opportunity for, like you were saying, to have somebody that they could read all about the beer. The beer has, you know, this beer has two row and caramel malt and Vienna, and it has this hop and that hop that tastes like this and that, but until they actually taste it and do a, you know, a rubbing of the hops and eat the grain and drink the wort. That's, I think, where the real education is important. Yeah.
And I definitely feel like, yeah, like starting off simple is way, way, way better. Because I remember, like, my first homebrew experience was on, like, a Moorbeer brew sculpture, and that was just like, you know, top of the line, all like the gadgets and gizmos, and I was like, what in tarnation's like going on here? Like the hot liquor, like the coils going through the hot liquor tank to heat up the mash. And like, I remember like I was brewing with Chad at the Brew Network house, and like I came home and I had to like write out, I was like, what is going on? Like, there's so much stuff, like the flow of the wort and everything, and like I was like, oh yeah, I guess if it was a little bit on a simpler system, it would have been a bit easier to understand starting off. But yeah, there's so many, like there's the few basic things, just getting that nailed down and then taking it up is always a good way to start.
So we've trained a bunch of people with a bunch of different experience, and it's really interesting training homebrewers versus non-homebrewers. In some ways, training people who haven't homebrewed is easier in some respects, because a lot of people come in with this knowledge base and it's like, yeah, but you're not going to brew for like a year, so we got to teach you all this other stuff that you have no idea how to do anyways. And it's really interesting training those people up. But also training brewers, and we have this weird thing where we let everyone on our staff write recipes and we work with them. And it's fun. They try things that we wouldn't have ever thought of because, you know, we're so set in our ways. This is the best way. But they don't actually care about those. Not necessarily they don't care about the rest of our beers, but the moment they start writing their own recipes and doing their own beers, they care so much more. Oh, man. And that's super interesting to me, and you see them come alive when they start doing it themselves. We don't have too many homebrewers on our staff at this point. We've had a few. So the people who have homebrew, though, they're the ones that like dive deep down that rabbit hole, and it's so much easier to get them to buy into what we're doing than the people who haven't. So not that the people who haven't homebrewed aren't awesome in their own respects. Some of them are like, oh, you were a mechanic or something. Like, you get all this right now. It's easier to train them in some of the other stuff. But the homebrewers are always better at figuring out recipes and why we do the way we do the things, you know, down the road once they figure out how to, like, CIP a fermenter.
So, all right, this last question we're going to go into, you know, we talked about homebrew shops, we talked about, you know, beer, ingredients, all those things. You know, this is going to air right around the new year. We have a year behind us. You know, this is right after Christmas. We're looking into the new year. Let's talk about the state of the industry, where we think it's going. I'd love to hear from the brewers, from the bottle shop owner. You know, what is the state of the industry? What are the trends we're seeing? Are lagers hopefully going to be taking over the tap list? What's happening? Let's talk about the state of the industry.
Talk about the elephant in the room. Yeah. People are brewing lagers nowadays. It's a thing. Which is great. I think I'm stoked on that. Like you said earlier, like, yeah, the more drinkable beers, the more approachable beers. I feel like, I mean, it's weird because, like, I feel like the people that I've, like, just got into craft beer within, like, the last year, like, are so stoked on, like, all, like, the, you know, like, marshmallow cream, you know, like, whatever beers. But, like the people that have been in it for, like, a couple years, like, oh, yeah, man, I got into craft beer in, like, 2018. I just can't do hazies anymore, man. Like, hazies are just too much for me. So I definitely feel like, yes, the more, like, drinkable, approachable thing, lagers is definitely trending right now. West Coast Pilsner. Looking at you, Ghost Town, that's definitely trending right now.
Is that
now,
a cold IPA, like, or what is that?
Oh man, don't get us started on that conversation. But yeah, you know, I think, you know, clear, crispy, you know, aromatic, balanced beers are definitely a thing coming in. The non-alcoholic, like the seltzer, all that kind of stuff is definitely a big trendy thing. Which, you know, I feel like, you know, things are just kind of shifting to more drinkability, less heavy intensity stuff, which is. It is what it is. But yeah, you know, like, it's like, you know, I see, probably looked at, like, on Instagram, like, the past, like, five breweries that I saw that I opened up are going to be, like, lager focused breweries with like West Coast hoppy beers, and it's like, okay, that's definitely kind of a thing right now. But yeah, I mean, which is exciting, you know. It's always fun. Like, I mean, I'm always down to see where the industry goes, and, like, it's always fun to experiment and learn new things. But yeah, just more drinkable beers, I'm down.
I think it's the same as before. You know, the IPAs are still going to reign supreme. We just happen to be in a place where the industry is saturated and people are going under, unfortunately. And so it's just innovation. You just have to do any kind of innovation you can, whether it's, like I mentioned before, mixed drinks, spirits, non-alcoholic beers, hop water, kombucha, beer that's, you know, hoppy, great, with really great hop products that are interesting and unique, and it's just keeping to push that boundary. I mean, we're in this beautiful industry that there's all these incredible people that are passionate about what they're doing, and to be able to show up and do something weird and fun that excites people, that's money right there. So just continuing to do that, and if you push it, people are going to see that you're really enjoying yourself and producing something great, and continue moving forward.
We're talking about trendy beers. I got to bring this up. At GABF, I had a double cold IPA with thialized lager yeast and Phantasm. It's pretty good.
As a brewer, I'm probably going to be the only one here to say it, that I hope hazy doesn't go away. I know.
No, no.
I mean, I'm over here drinking a clear beer. But I think there is something to hazy beer, and like the public, a lot of the public, we still make more hazy beer than anything else we make. It actually has gone down. We used to have to make 3 or 4 hazies a week. We're down to like 1 or 2, which is what it is. But I do think the hazy beers are a gateway. And when a hazy's really good, like, they're really damn good. Like, I don't know. Sometimes I sit at home, and if I'm going to watch a movie, I'm going to open a double hazy IPA, and I'm going to drink that for 2 hours. Because there's something about those really, really good ones when they're peaking and they're awesome. They're amazing. And a lot of the things we do now to all our West Coast beers are from, you know, experimenting with hazy beers. They are a really good platform for hops. And their hazy beers at their peak never are different than a West Coast at their peak. They are a different beast. And kind of like, I don't know, I think of them as like the Cabernet Sauvignon of the beer world, where I can't drink a cab all day. Like, I love wine, but that's not the thing I drink all the time. But, you know, when in the right environment, the right place, they are awesome. And if the consumer likes that thing, if that is the gateway to get people in, like, let's make sure we make those beers the best. They're not easy to make. I think they're really hard as hell to get them to that perfect, ripe, juicy balance, you know, bright, like not overly sweet, not overly anything, just kind of like that perfect thing. And they're kind of fun, in my opinion. They're fun to make because you can't just ignore them. But yeah, so I don't think hazy will ever go away, and I don't think it should go away. I do think people are trending towards kind of more drinkable beers in general, but I think there is a place in the industry for them.
I'm glad you said that, Magic, about first, I'm glad that you championed that, because yeah, it's a great way. They're great beers. I think we all, you know, admit it or not, have enjoyed them. But then, like, when they first came out, I remember, like, all the old school brewers just, oh, it's super easy, you
never
know,
gonna
like,
do it.
Never gonna do it, it's super, yeah, and they started doing it, except for Coke. But like, there's a lot that goes into it, the water profile, you know, it's not easy, so let's not, like, you know, it's fun to poke fun at it, but it is, you know, there is something, and it's drove the industry quite a bit too. So we got to, like, you know, give them credit for that too, right? You know,
so. Well, there's good and bad ones, just like every other style out there. And the good ones are amazing, but the amount of ones you've had that you're like, this is just the okayest beer I've ever had, is huge.
Okay, we're talking state of the industry. We talked ingredients, which is great. And I think, Lester, we talked about this in our episode that we did, and I see it up here on the board too. We're showing the hops, right? And this is something you didn't see 10 years ago. We're talking about, this has Mosaic in it, right? So it's teaching the customer, this is Mosaic, I like Mosaic, things like that. So, like, let's talk a little bit about that, about teaching the public, and then, you know, even the bottle shops are doing that, right?
I 100% agree, and that's what I was going to say, is it's not so much about, like, teaching the public and teaching, you know, the consumers, but I feel like this is, more than anything, this is the age of the consumer. This is the age of the alcohol consumer. You know, we touched on it a little bit briefly about all the ready-to-drink cocktails, all the hard kombuchas and the ciders. And I feel like what we're finding is that the market is getting segmented in, like, finer and finer ways. And that is ultimately great for the consumer, because the consumer can find exactly what they want. You know, we talked about it with the hazy IPAs. Like, the hazy IPA was meeting a market need for customers that wasn't being met before, where before all I could get was Green Flash IPA, and it was just overly 100 IBUs bitter. And the market kind of got segmented to say, like, no, like, hops can be great, hops are great, and they don't have to be bitter. And that kind of created this whole new trajectory. And then what we're kind of finding is this splicing in of kind of new alcoholic beverages, just different ways to consume alcohol, different ways to drink, different flavors that can be kind of consumed. And that education piece is important because that is a way that we can communicate, like, to those kind of segmented populations, well, like, this beer is different than that beer because here's the information, or like, this is different than that sort of beverage because, you know, here's the information. You know, so consumers are getting more educated, and they should, because that helps them ultimately choose kind of what's best for them. And I think that's what we're kind of moving towards, is, you know, finding a beverage kind of for everybody. And to me, like, that was kind of the great thing about craft beer, was it was a way where it's not wine, it's not Cabernet. Like, you're able to find, you know, a Belgian Saison, you can find a Lambic Sour, you can find a West Coast IPA, Hazy IPA, and there's something for everybody. And I feel like ultimately that's what's going to keep craft moving forward, is there's always going to be something for everybody, and people who are doing some of those somethings are going to do it better than anybody else. And like, that kind of drives the market forward.
I definitely feel like, you know, maybe like the term brewery might, it's like breweries might be turning into just like beverage manufacturing than just, it's like you have these tanks, you have everything. It's like it's easy to make a hard seltzer, to make a, you know, a mixed cocktail, licensing, all that behind. But it's like, you know, craft beer is this thing, beer is this thing, the rise of the seltzer, of the mixed cocktails. It's kind of like, oh, like, I don't need to like drink this beer to get this. I can kind of like, I way like the seltzer way more because I get the same vibe, the same feel from it, but it's way less calories, or it's this or that, or whatever, non-alcoholic beer. So I kind of feel like, yeah, like, just beverage manufacturing in general is like kind of the moving toward of the thing. And like, there's always going to be like the traditional, I feel like, you know, the traditional people, they're going to stay doing their thing. And, you know, like, if it's good for them or not, we'll kind of see. But it's just, it's, yeah, you know, there's so many different options now. The future is here. And beer kind of just like, it was that one thing for a while, but now there's so many different things that branched off it, which is great. And it's just kind of fun to see where it goes.
So what's funny is I've been at Heretic since 2013, and there is one question that always happens. The grain, the spent grain, is coming out of the ladder ton, and people ask, are those the hops?
Oh, I love that.
So
yes.
I think people are caring less about the IBUs and the SRMs and all those bits of information. The hops don't matter. It's, they want a story. And so it's figuring out whether it's a kombucha or whatever that craft beverage is, they need a story that makes it special, whether it's a, you know, some kind of hook to bring people in. I find when I walk past my tap room and somebody's buying a beer, it's not because they walk in, they're like, I want a West Coast IPA. It's because the bartender walks over and she says, or he says, this is, you know, a beer that we did do specially. It's that we bring people together, which is the beautiful thing about the beer industry, is we're somehow still, we still like each other. I don't think that's in, you know, other industries. And so it's that story that brings people back in and makes them buy the beer. And I think we're just going to continue to have to do that.
All right. I just want to say thanks to all the guests, you guys, for coming together, letting me come into your breweries, talk to you. Thank you for your friendship, all that. I'd like to thank our host, Melissa. Yeah. Thank you. For giving us a venue to come together and talk about all this stuff. I'd like to thank More Beer and Chris for giving me a platform to talk to all these people and talk about stuff that's important to us. Yeah. And then last but not least, we want to thank Joe, our producer, who makes us look good. And then the real heroes here, you guys, the viewers that watch this, and don't troll us in the comments. We love you. This is amazing. I love doing this for you guys. I love talking with these people. This is amazing. Let's make great craft beer. Happy New Year's and all that fun stuff. Cheers.